All right, welcome back. We spent the morning kind of talking a lot of theory about safety culture, and I think now's the time then to, let's see if we can't put it into practice. How does it apply to us? What can we do about just reporting, learning, especially those three pillars of the safety culture? And to help me with this next part, I'm gonna bring up the Director of Safety at the ATO, Joe Wieninger. Come on up, Joe. Round of applause, please. Thank you. Joe, as a director, what exactly are you responsible for?
I would say right now I'm the punching bag for the media, but overall I do the VSRP programs, I have quality assurance, I have runway safety. We also do litigation, so if you find yourself in court, my team actually will help you prep and get ready for that. We also do all the SRTs, event response teams, but again, enough about me. I think we got four amazing panelists coming up, so I think let's bring them out.
Let's bring them out.
Let's do this. So the first one, Eric Chenard, NACA Western ERC. Second, we have LaForest Leak, the ATSAP program manager. And we have Dawn Johnson, the NACA Confidential Information Sharing Program. And last, we have Paul Sapersky, United Airlines ALPA.
All right. Thanks for being here, y'all. I'll go ahead and throw out this first question, representing, you know, being current. Never lost my currency. I'm very proud of that. Let me throw out from the workforce then. And Eric and LaForest, I'm gonna throw this first one to you. Let's say an event has occurred. Maybe it was a pilot deviation. I did nothing wrong. I know I did nothing wrong. There's no question that I did nothing wrong. Then why should I file? Why would I want to file an ATSAP?
Yeah, there's a good reason why you'd file. It's one of our biggest jobs is to identify trends. And even though you may not be at fault, you can report something odd that happened at your facility during your shift. And it may not be a big issue at one facility, but maybe it happened a couple times in the central service area and over in the eastern service area. And when we talk on our weekly calls with the different ERCs, we can now identify that it's happening quite a few times in the last week and over the last month, and now we've identified a trend that's happening.
So it's kind of the ATC version of American Airlines and the problems with the doors that they were having.
Sure, and we take the data points out of all those reports and we put them into what we call an electronic file cabinet. We've got about 900 of these file cabinets that we can store different issues in, from TCAS RAs to runway safety incursions to MIA MVA bus. And when you start getting a lot of these reports going into some of these file cabinets, you can definitely see the rise in a trend starting.
Okay, LaForest?
So one of the things that I think about is each person has a role in reporting, right? Each person brings a different perspective to the report, okay? And it adds value to a specific issue, for sure. So we want to be able to get those reports and get those trends and stuff out there, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting how two people can witness the same event and come away with a totally different perception of what occurred, right?
Right.
But, so let me ask you this. Well, I've met my obligation. If I simply turn around and tell my supervisor, hey, this happened, they file an MOR, I've met my obligation. I've in essence, met your objective, no?
Well, so that question to me is two-part, right? Whether it's a safety event or it's a systemic issue. Okay, if we talk about the safety event, I think you should file an ATSAT report, right? That way you are allowed the protections of the program, okay? Additionally, the MOR, it doesn't look at the big picture, right? So, to me, that's where the issue kind of comes into play. So that's why I think it's very important that you continue to file that ASAP. So one, you can get the protections of the report, and then you can also get that identifying information.
Eric, it seemed like you wanted to add something to that.
Yeah, he talked about the event reporting and why you do that. We also have the safety problem reporting too, which is a broken piece of equipment or a frequency that's not working well. And you can just tell your supervisor, that's perfectly fine. But we use a reference a lot of times of an iceberg. You've got 90% of that iceberg's underwater and only 10% above. Well, if you consider that the bottom of that iceberg is the frontline personnel, they know everything that's going on. They know 100% of what the problems are. They know everything that's going on. As you move that up that iceberg a little bit, you get into the OMs and the ATMs and the facility reps, and those are the people that can actually start to fix the problems. Well, ADSAP can go take that report and go right to the top of the people who can fix it, to the ATMs and the FAC reps. And if they get stuck, we can go out of the facility and get help from the region or national help to fix something. So you always have a more direct line by filing your ADSAP report. There's other reasons too, like once the safety issue gets identified and there's an ADSAP report on it, it's not gonna get dropped. We look at these reports every week, every report every week, and ensure that it's not missing a deadline, or if it is, we get them back on track to get them back on schedule to fix it. We get collaboration. So every issue that's been identified has to be signed off by both the manager and the facility rep. And then as the facility's working, if they get stuck at any particular level and there's an ADSAP on it, we're already there, we're in the process to help elevate it to a more of a national level.
I appreciate that, yeah, please.
So to add to that, we talk about our principles of the VSRP, right, which is trust, you know, confidence, consensus. He mentioned the collaboration part. So we want that same collaboration at the local facilities as well. So when we get responses, we want it to be collaborative because that's very important to us, as he mentioned.
I think that was really important what you said there, trust, confidence, and collaboration.
Trust, confidence, consensus, and collaboration, because as an ERC, we all have to come to consensus. That way we accept that the report is acceptable and we're able to kind of move forward.
Okay. Paul, I'm not so curious about the nuts and bolts side, but more the mentality on the pilot side, reference this reporting that we're talking about.
Well, we have a culture of, if you don't tell us about it, we can't possibly fix it. So while in large part in the past, it would be the get out of jail free component or say I had a regulatory deviation, but now it's, I see something interdivisionally within the system that lowers the safety of the operation. So if I don't tell somebody about it, how are we gonna possibly fix it? So that's where we see a lot of our reports have upticked outside of the regulatory arena in the just general safety concern reporting.
Appreciate that.
Excellent. So there's one thing that I've learned being in this position in about a year and a half is ADSAP is a very complex program, right? So Eric, just starting with you, just curious, after somebody files an ADSAP, what happens after that?
Sure, so the report gets filed. We are a confidential program. So it goes to our ADSAP analysts and they redact any identifying information. Dates, times, call signs, he's, she's, anything that can identify it. So there's basically one person in each region, in each service area, that has any idea who could have filed the report. Once that report gets filed, it comes to the ERC for discussion. We'll look at the reports individually. It's made up of three branches, AOV, which is Aviation Oversight, ATO, which is the air traffic management side, and the union side. We each look at those reports and decide how we want to handle it. And then once a week we meet in a meeting and decide, come to consensus on what we're going to do with it. If we don't come to consensus, we will continue to discuss that report until we do. Once we come to a consensus, it's either going to be accept or not accepted. We have about 7 exclusionary factors that would make it fall into the not accepted category. It's spelt out in MOU and SOP, and it is what it is. Anything else that's not meeting that criteria gets accepted. Once that report gets accepted, we have 4 different actions we can take on it. We can basically take no action, which is for the most part, most of our human error, our lapses, our events, we collect all the data points out of it to get any trending information that we can, and then we'll close out that report to the submitter. We can do skill enhancement training. It follows the contract and the orders. It has to fit certain parameters before skill enhancement can be recommended on that report, but that's one of our corrective actions. And along the same lines, we can do professional standards training. We use the National Professional Standards folks, which is the top of the line training that they can get. Once you get a professional standards referral from those guys, mostly come back as a resolved report, to my knowledge, we don't have any reoccurrences after it's gone to professional standards. The last action we can take is systemic corrective action. It's gonna start at the facility level with the manager and the FAC rep, and we're gonna spotlight the issue. So once the ERC has determined that something may rise to a safety issue, we'll give that to the facility. They can collaborate, consents, and give us back if they think it's a problem, and if it is, we expect them to mitigate it. Up to the point that if they get stuck, we will then step in and help elevate it above the facility level to region or national level to get it fixed.
And I'd like to take that a step further, as a matter of fact, because after the report is filed through ATSAP, if there is at all any mention of an airline within that ATSAP, we do send a de-identified report to the airlines. And I wanted to show you, we have over 34 partners that we share that with. So if there's an airline mentioned within the report, we share that. Now what happens with that is that we will match it with the pilot report. And if we have a pilot report, we actually get a whole different view. And the reports that are shared with the pilot community, I say community, but with that ASAP program through CISP, it actually gives the pilots a different perspective as well. So we're getting a controller perspective, and we're getting a pilot perspective. And we're able to put that whole picture together.
Which is very important for connecting the dots, because a lot of time in the moment in the flight deck, when something happens, you replay it in your mind after the flight. When you get to the hotel, even the day after, debriefing it among your crew members. But when we have that feedback through CISP, we can really clear up any ambiguity and also engage with our rep to resolve any differences of understanding or whatnot and help the system.
And it actually comes back full circle, because I'm analyzing the pilot reports. We have a team that analyzes the pilot reports and all the different airlines that we are partners with, and we match them up. We actually look for issues that we think maybe the ERC, if there's a report match with a ATSAP, we send that to the ERC so they're aware of it and they can see that full picture as well. But from the pilot side, we do look at some of the things that the pilots report. And there is a 2-week lag, I'd say. So the ATSAP reports we get right away, right? Those come to us right away. But the pilot reports, they go through the ERC first, and then they come to us. And it's about 2 weeks later. And we match them with the ATSAPs. And there are some issues that we come across that we're like, oh, this is a great one. I'm going to send this to the ERC to see if they're seeing something on the controller side. It's kind of a disappointment when we find something from the pilot side reporting, then we don't find it from the controller side. Because if we can match those up, it becomes something that we can actually mitigate.
Hey, Eric, quick question. I think the ERC went to Atlanta here recently. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so we went to Atlanta for the first training in person that we've had in quite some time, and it was super beneficial for the collaboration portion. Like LaFora said, we have to collaborate on everything. And so that got us a good time together to get everyone's perspective on acceptance of reports, exclusion of reports, what it takes to raise a report, elevate it, different things like that. But while we were there, we sat in on the Delta Airlines ERC meeting, which was so enlightening. What they do to their The feedback that they give to their pilots is impressive. And whether it's off one of our ATSAP reports or when they combine up the ASAP and the ATSAP report, they reach out to most of the crews that were involved in that incident. And it's not training, it's not skill enhancement, but it's feedback. It's feedback to that crew who otherwise couldn't get it. They're a crew of two normally in that cockpit with nobody else there to on the spot correct or whatnot. So they give that feedback to those pilots, and it's extremely accepted by the pilots. It's lessons learned, and it's something that we don't exactly follow in the ATSAP program, but it's very beneficial.
You know, you mentioned it, and we've got one of the questions, so I might as well attack it now. What factors determine a set recommendation from the ERC?
You want me to take that?
Absolutely.
So, in this particular situation, for us, the ERC, we wish we could snap our finger and be able to get equipment fixed for you guys. Unfortunately, there's a process that we have to follow, right? But we are really working on getting those issues addressed, whether it's through a car, whether it's through air, okay? But understand that we are working day in and day out to get those issues fixed, but it's not gonna happen overnight. Unfortunately, that's the culture that we're kinda in. But it doesn't fall on deaf ears, it doesn't. We read every single report, right? And we try to mitigate the issues that we can. So understand that we are working to get those things fixed, but obviously there's a process, and sometimes those things take a little bit longer than we would like.
We're not a group known for patience and that letting it take a while. So, all right, that's hard for us sometimes.
It is, but understand that we're still trying to get those things accomplished. And through reporting is how we get those things accomplished. So I encourage you to continue to report ASAPs, because again, it doesn't fall on deaf ears. We're trying to work those issues.
Let's just keep going with the questions. What factors determine a set recommendation from the ERC?
So when a set request comes in from the facility, all we are doing is following the ATSAP order, the 7200.20 Bravo, and the contract. That's all we're doing, is making sure that those are followed, and if they are, then the set's gonna get recommended. Basically, what they're going to say is it's not a single snapshot event, so we need to see multiple identified performance deficiencies. Basically, it's going to be more than one performance record conversation on a same issue. So we get into a lot of discussion on positive control, box one of the dash 25. That is not a single safety issue. Turns to final is. Speeds on final is. MIA violations is the same issue. But positive control is not. So we have a understanding that the issue identified is specific, as the contract would state. So first it has to meet that. Then the set that's being recommended, whether it's lab time, MAP study, 0.65 study, it has to match
yeah.
What the event was. And then if all those things line up, set's gonna be recommended.
Oh, sounds like I got a reading assignment, doggone it. Paul, you brought it up, so let me start with you and then I'll come over here. You mentioned the big words, the get out of jail free card, and how VSRP is often perceived at that. But you seem to go in a different direction, like that's not the mentality here. We certainly hear that. So how is it perceived? Is there no accountability due to VSRP or is it embraced on the airline side?
Well, I wouldn't say that there, one report can move the needle. I think that's what's important, whether it be in the ATSAP world or in our ASAP world within the airlines. And you know, the regulatory piece, that's certificate protection for participation in disclosing your error. which when we debrief our crews, we learn things that we then feed back through CISP to ATSAP and through our FAA member on the ERC, which might not have been known at the time when the MLR was filed or even to the crew. But outside of the regulatory deviations, it's that one report that could make the difference, because once the ERC learns of it, the three-legged stool, so to speak, discusses it, we can assign it to a process owner. And that process owner has to answer or accept a risk or design a mitigation, one of the two. And that's what our crews have been able to see, is that whether it be one report or multiple reports, that we actually can affect change based on their participation.
And that's what we're looking for, right, is the effect change.
Oh, it certainly does.
You want me to? So on the ATSAP side, most of the reports that we receive has some form of self-reflection or accountability, right? If we don't see that, then, you know, we could reach out to the submitters or get that background information and get some more detail. Right, so for us, it's not a get out of jail free card, okay? In order to have a just culture, we need to have a blameless, non-punitive atmosphere that fosters trust, right? So by filing the ATSAP, it gives us that insight that we wouldn't normally have. And without that insight, I think it limits our ability for continuous improvement. So, I mean, that's kind of what we're looking for, is that ability for continuous improvement. So it's not a get out of jail free card at all.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because when I read the pilot reports, there is a lot of self-reflection on what's going on in the flight deck and what may have happened. So it's an interesting concept, and interesting that you added that.
So Paul, you mentioned that one report could change the needle or move the needle per se. So there's a question up here, I think it's pertinent. When an issue is identified and everyone agrees on a fix, but funding is an issue, how much pressure can you put on the right people to move things forward?
So funding is tough, probably second only to staffing. But when it gets into a funding issue, it's obviously gone through the facility. The facility is at a standstill, and that's, as I said before, that's when we step in and start elevating it. Most of our CARS, National Corrective Action Requests, are due to funding. We've got STVS replacement, we've got IDS replacement, we've got multiple issues that all fall to funding. And so we write up a National Corrective Action, it gets sent out to the lines of business of the particular business that's going to work that issue. And they have to either agree to accept that car or they have to sign off on the safety risk. There's not many VPs in the FAA right now that are going to sign off on a safety risk that's been identified by one of the ERCs. It's not going to happen. So the car gets issued and we wait for the funding. And now it's on the radar for the next available funding that they see that safety issue gets prioritized in. And that's about the tops that we can do.
All right, Don, let's go to you, because, first of all, describe to us, we've heard the term CISP, Confidential Information Share Program. Help us understand what it is that you do, and then what do I get out of it as an average controller?
So the Confidential Information Share Program, we have a team that goes through the pilot reports, and we identify issues. We also match the pilot reports up with the ATSAP reports. We will send them to the ERC if there's a match. There's also, we also look for trends and issues that we think should be brought to the attention of the ERC to ask questions. Are you seeing this? Is this been an issue? Have you heard from the facility on this? And we actually meet weekly, and we talk about trends, and we talk about things that we're seeing from each of our airlines. And then we kind of pass that information along to our CISP partners. If there is something that we come across from a CISP report that needs a follow-up, we do reach out to our CISP partners. We have really good relationships with the airlines, and through the Confidential Information Share Program, we do a lot of sharing as far as issues that we can mitigate. And we've come across some things. that, you know, are easy mitigation, like change a call sign, right? There's been some call signs that, similar sounding call signs that we've, were able to mitigate. I know United has come across some things that we have been able to mitigate with those also.
Absolutely, and it's only a phone call away, and that is because of the relationship that exists between between our programs, where it only, again, we talk about that one report. We had one event with departing off a certain direction of where an RNAV-2 wasn't for that departure runway, and but yet crews were getting cleared direct to, and so we one call to your peer Eric, we got that addressed with the facility, and all because of one report.
And we read every single pilot report that comes through, so we are reading all of them from. Issues on taxiways, and I say issues, you know, things pertaining to missed taxi instructions. And we like to see matches because we like to be able to share them with the airlines to show that, that yes, the controller caught this or the controller found this or this happened. So some of the things we wish we had more reporting on, to be honest.
Shameless plug for more reporting. All right. So I think there's a question here that kind of goes to what you were talking about there with assistance and everything. Do your partnerships for ASAP and ATSAP extend beyond just Part 121 and Part 135, for example? Do you communicate with nationwide flight schools?
So it's not our process automatically to do that like it is with the airlines. However, each ERC, I know in the West, we've certainly had shares that have gone
outside the agency.
Outside the agency. And we can make a process on an individual report. It takes a little more doing on our part. We send it up to the program office, make sure that the confidentiality is all there. We get a little bit more permission from the submitter to make sure that they're fine with where it's going. You know, any of these reports that get shared, we are reaching out to the submitters to make sure that they are comfortable with what we're going to do with it. The first step would be facility management and union, which is pretty basic. Most people are good with that. But if we're doing anything beyond that, we're reaching out to the submitters to make sure that they understand that their report is going to a different level.
But at the same time, there is a box that can be checked for local safety council. So if it's something that can be solved locally, the box can be checked to send it to the local safety council, and the local safety council can take a look at that.
So, I mean, since we're on that and we're talking about what do we do with our data, so we don't want that data to be caught in a silo, right? We want to be able to get that data and share it with the people who can make change, okay? And through data requests, so we have a lot of recurring data requests, right? So it's either, you know, at the national level, the regional level, or even at the local level. We share with Top 5, we share with the Fatigue Mitigation Work Group, we share with ASIAS, SRM panels, Railway Safety, Airport Construction. So we get that information out to the people who need it, right? But with ATSAP, it is a confidential program, okay? And we take confidentiality very seriously. So we scrub those reports and they're completely sanitized. We de-identify those so that we can share that information. So.
With the data requests, we are over 700 data requests so far. And these data requests can range for anything. We do have recurring ones that happen monthly and quarterly. And those are things like construction. Airport construction, we have ERAM, yes, ERAM. We still take ASAP reports on ERAM, and we still mitigate those issues with ERAM. Just numerous ones, and to be honest with you, it's not just ASAP that we have that information coming from. We also take it from the SIS program, so we also pull some of those reports that the pilots are reporting. So if there's something that happened when they landed in an airport and it pertained to airport construction, we do request permission to share from that airline to share that report with those data requests. So the data requests can be very, very useful, especially if you're dealing with issues at your facility and you're working an issue, let's say, and you can request a data request collaboratively with management and NACA.
I think the sharing the data, I mean, that's a good, another good question here. 2017, a solar eclipse had crazy levels of air traffic. As we prepare for the April 2024 eclipse, can we look back at the lessons learned from the 2017 event?
Absolutely, and that can come from a data request. Yeah, that can be pulled as long as it's requested collaboratively. Okay. And that is an example, a great example of something that we can pull data from. So
yeah,
with those ASAP reports that were reported, and even from the CISP side, we can also put all those reports together. Yep.
So I think one of the main questions, and we only have a few minutes here, is really what is the point of filing an ASAP? I'll let all of you speak. We'll start with Eric.
We talked about the trends at the beginning. When we see a rise in a trend, we get that information and we try to curb it and stop that rise. ASAP briefing sheets, recurrent training, when we see that rise, we want to stop it and get it back down to an acceptable level. So those reports, whether you think it means much or not, when you add them all together, it adds up. And then we can, throughout all the ERCs, we can definitely see that we have a problem over here and we need to get it out to the workforce. We don't only get it to the workforce, we can get it to outside entities with approval. We can get that data out to the airlines. Those trends are very noticeable and we can make use of them and learn from them.
You talk about trends. Before I go over here, let me address the one question then. Is there a certain number of reports that tends to move the needle versus others? Is that a thing?
It isn't. It depends on the situation. We have national corrective action requests off of one report. I can give an example. John Wayne, Orange County Airport, they built a radius to fix SID, standard instrument departure, off the airport, and ERAM doesn't allow someone to file the equipment qualifier to tell who's eligible to depart on that SID. So aircraft were getting airborne, and they find out that they can't fly a radius to fix route. It's noise abatement, it's all over the sky, and they end up in the wrong place. And now the controllers have to, while they're below MIA, they got to get them back on a route, and they put the onus of who can fly that SID on the controllers at the tower. And it's not right. And so we stopped building those RF radius to fix SIDs. One report, we elevated as high as we could, did a corrective action request on it. ERAM just got the fix in it to now differentiate who can fly that or file that type of equipment. They can now fly the RF SID, they can now resume making them, and the onus is back on the automation of the equipment, the pilots to file correctly, and the planes are where they're supposed to be, and there's fewer incidences of safety issues now. One report. There's other reports where it may take more reports just to figure out what the issue is, to notice that it is a problem and it wasn't a performance issue. So reports do matter at times. We have another car that was issued on wake separation in the terminals on, I mean, you're gonna have to forgive me, is ATPA, where there's what, seven classifications, and if you got a Cherokee and you're putting in a P28, it's not recognized, it's not an ICAO identifier, so it's not recognized by that, and so it's gonna give you the biggest separation you need. It's gonna call it a heavy when it goes into the Core 30 airports. One or two reports got that to a national corrective action request. They're doing education on on aircraft types and making sure you put it in the right type in the flight plan, but we also want a safety logic check on the flight plan entry. When it went to a car, they asked if we were still getting reports on it, and we weren't. We hadn't gotten reports in years. because it took that long to get to where we were going. So they've now prioritized the safety logic check on the FIDO. It's years out. It's years and years out, because they felt that the training alone curved it enough, because the ATSAP reports are down enough. It's still happening. I talk to people. They are getting the error of equipment, of how far that Cherokee is supposed to be behind the other plane, but we don't not getting the reports to justify it. So yeah, at times, the reports matter.
Eric, you mentioned somebody was asking about reports being filed. So one of these questions, it's asking about improving the communication from the submitter. It says, was the issue accepted? What was the result? What is being done to correct the issue?
So like Don said, we read every report. We respond to every report. So in your ATSAP homepage messaging tab, you have a response that it was accepted, that your initial filing was taken. You have a message showing that it was, what was done with it. If it was closed out, you have a message saying that. If we're looking for permission to share it to the facility, you have a message saying that. In the West, and from talking with my counterparts in the East and Central, we give feedback every time we get it from the facility. So the facility gets a month to work on something, they give us the feedback, we update the submitter through the messaging of ATSAP. They get the entire feedback of what went on with the mitigation of that ATSAP report until it gets closed out. So there is correspondence every time we get it with the submitters. I know that on the NACA side, there's six of us throughout the NAS, two in each service area. We spend Thursdays and Fridays, the days after our meeting, making submitter calls, because we are reaching out for more information, describing why we chose to close a report. There's a large amount of time spent calling submitters.
I'm going to do you solid here, I think. When we were developing your current training, you're talking about VSRP. One of the things we are encouraged to do is keep our contact information up to date. Is that a thing?
It's a thing that needs to be done, absolutely.
I got one this week. Later.
I got one this week that was not up to date, and it was a female who got married, and the facility does not even think she works there. So, yeah, name
keep
changes.
Keep your information up to date.
Keep your information up to date.
But that's right. Interesting, because it still is relevant on the pilot side. So if you look at the amount of ATSAP filed per year, as opposed to how many CISP reports we receive per year. Are you responding to all of the pilot reports also the same way we are, or what's the difference or similarities?
Like Eric was saying, the feedback loop is key. And we engage with our submitters as much as we possibly can because it's very easy. We go via email when they get their closures. And we try to tailor responses in their emails. But a lot of the reporting that we get sometimes are career type events. So we like to have that feedback loop with them, so that way they know that their report was seen by their labor representative, their company representative, and the FAA representative. When it comes to ATSAP reports, we always make sure that we get that back to them, because otherwise they might not know.
They don't know what the controller side is versus their side.
That's correct.
With the time I have left, I'm gonna punt it to you. Going back to Joe's question, why should I file?
All right, so we are currently celebrating our 15-year anniversary, right? And with that, the reason why we have been around for 15 years is because the program works. Right, it's robust, okay? Over the years, we've had ton of success stories, right? And in order to have those success stories, we gotta get that reporting, okay? So for me, one of those things, if you see something, say something, because that's the only way that actions are gonna happen and things are gonna be able to get done.
All right, I appreciate it. That does bring us to the conclusion of the time for this panel. I'd like to give you all a round of applause, and I thank you for your insight. Yeah.